How do I learn to trust myself to keep my commitments? What's up, you guys? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast. I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler. We're brothers.
We're therapists.
We're not afraid of your questions.
So bring it. Okay, that's an important question, one that I think most humans struggle with to some degree. So this topic, as we talk about it today, I think will be applicable to most people, but it will also be really applicable for, I think, addiction recovery and things like that. So you guys, I'm here alone. Tyler's off this week. He's out of town. I don't know what he's doing. He's probably in the mountains riding horses. Hopefully he's not falling off a horse or something, but... Whenever he goes out, he's just like in the wilderness somewhere doing crazy stuff. So that's where Tyler is. I hope he's safe, but not to worry. I got an awesome guest today. His name is Dax, and I'm so grateful that that he's here. I've known him for a little while, but not very well. But we met a while ago, and I'll just let Dax kind of share his story a little bit, introduce himself, and then we'll dive right into the question. So, Dax, take it away.
All right. Yeah, like Brandon said, my name's Dax. Really, it's Daxson, but only my family really calls me that these days. So, I guess just a little bit of my story. I am in recovery from an addiction to pornography. So. And Brandon, I want to say, I was really thinking about using an alias coming into this.
Do you want to change? Do you want to start over?
No. I was going to say, I like coming in, even coordinating it with, the secretary. I was like, I'm going to use an alias. And then I thought about it and said, well, no, cause I mean, it's my story and I can own it. And, if anybody is listening who knows me and doesn't know my story yet, I think the fact that they're listening to this podcast gives them the right to know it. So,
boom, Dax, I love it. Listen to that courage, you guys. That's freaking awesome. I love people owning their story, owning their stuff, throwing it out there because that's what kills shame. You know, I just, what do you got to hide, Dax? You know, and
yeah,
you've learned a lot through your recovery. So here you are. Maybe you're outing yourself a little bit, but thank you for your courage.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, I was initially exposed to pornography around age 11 or 12 and just kind of developed an addiction from there. I was lucky to have a good amount of friends in high school who I opened up with. My best friend through high school also struggled with a pornography addiction, and he and I were constantly trying to work together to overcome it in various ways, but didn't ever have the real tools. So sobriety never lasted. My addiction was as strong as it had ever had been when I met my girlfriend, Emily. I was 17 years old, and she and I went out on a date, and on our third date, I asked her to be my girlfriend. We moved really quick. And that night I quit cold turkey like the morning of our first date. That night when I asked her to be my girlfriend, I beat around the bush, sort of told her I had an addiction, but, never outright said what it was, and just kind of opened up a little more as our relationship grew. About 2 months in, I had my first relapse. I mean, I had that sobriety, but it was really unfounded, and where I'm at in recovery now, I know for a fact there were some things that I did in that 2 months that I would have called a relapse now. But from there, I had pretty inconsistent relapses through the relationship with Emily. And most of the time I was honest and upcoming with them, but probably about more like 8 months into our relationship, I lied to her about some relapses for the first time. And she found out about them. And then a couple months later, I lied again and continued to relapse every couple weeks after that and kept them from her. And then the relapses became more frequent as I detached more and more from myself and from her. And so I was keeping that from her for several months until all the guilt caught up with me one night, and I knew I needed to change something, and my energy changed. I was carrying around so much guilt and shame. And for the next 2 weeks, like, I was sober and I was like hurting really bad, and Emily could tell something was off. And I was like trying to get up the guts to tell her what had happened, but eventually she sort of probed, and I opened up about everything, and we almost broke up. I think the only reason we didn't was because of codependency at that point. But she went to a family therapist like the next day, and she introduced us to the podcast, The Betrayed, the Addicted, and the Expert. And that's what got us started into real recovery. That's when we did an intake with you, Brandon, and we're both in Lyft groups now. And, you know, I started recovery May of 2020 as a 19-year-old kid. I'm 20 years old, by the way. I guess I should say.
You're an old man.
Yeah. Yep. So I started recovery as a 19-year-old kid working two part-time jobs that I didn't make much money, and paying $500 a month for therapy out of my pocket. But it was never even a question of money. It was like, I know I need this. And I was in a group with Kobe Mitchell for a while. And like I said, we do Lyft, and I see Holly at Therapy Utah. Hope it's okay for me to say her name.
Absolutely.
She's the best. Would recommend her to anybody any day, addiction or not.
She is amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, Dax, I'm getting a little feedback. Oh, it's gone. Perfect. We did it.
We're good. Okay, cool. Yeah. You know, I've been really committed to recovery, and I've loved it for the year I've been in, but I've always struggled with some infrequent relapses, and I went a really long time without watching pornography, and my relapses were on a smaller scale, not to minimize them or anything, but no masturbation or pornography or anything like that. But it was like, it was still an issue, still was relapsing, you know, max a couple times a month. But recently, Emily and I had a couple relapses sort of close together, and Emily and I, we decided to, well, it was her choice. We're doing a separation right now, which is, I think, interesting for a couple who's not married or anything, but we normally spend like every minute together, but for the past 2 weeks, we've been in this separation, and it's been really hard, but I've made a lot of really powerful realizations about myself in this time. First and foremost, I struggled really, really hard, had some significant relapses right at the beginning of the separation. And that made me realize, like, I've been in recovery, but I kind of thought I was over the whole addict thing, but clearly I'm not. So I'm still an addict. And I know I'm not working my recovery for anybody else. I know I'm working it for myself, and I have been for a while, but what I realized digging down into it is that I have this fear of failure, and not because I'm afraid of losing Emily. I definitely am, but it's like, I'm so sick of this addiction in my life, and I'm scared that I'm never going to be free of it. So it's like I made it up this mountain, you know, I'm climbing this mountain of recovery, and it's amazing. And I turn around to appreciate the view, and suddenly I'm afraid of heights. And that fear of falling makes me feel unstable on my knees. So I feel really committed. I want this so bad until a crucial moment comes where I can really put relapse prevention and all that good stuff into practice. And then I falter, and that's where I mess up.
I love your analogy of the mountain and turning around and being afraid of heights. Our greatest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure, and sometimes success can be one of the biggest triggers for an addiction. And if you think about it, success is vulnerable, because now you have further to fall, it creates this weird thing where if you keep the addiction around just enough, just a little bit, just enough, then you never get too far up that mountain. but that's not the goal, right?
Yeah.
You want to be able to be free, to be able to soar, to be able to float as high as you can go and look down and enjoy the view. I'm glad that you're aware of it. I'm glad that you're seeing it, but something's not working, right? There's that fear of failure there that's really undermining your recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I've done my own work to dig further into that issue, self-discipline is definitely something I really struggle with. And that's not just in my addiction, that's in all areas of my life. And the other thing is trust. I don't trust myself. I think about I try to prepare and plan for the next moment a trigger or an urge comes, and I'm like, yeah, I got it. But then this other part of my brain is like, no, you don't. You're gonna screw that up. That's so scary. You're not gonna be able to get through that. You're gonna screw that up. And I don't trust myself to carry my commitment through. And I don't know. So I guess my question boils down to, how do I overcome my fears and my faulty core beliefs to create self-discipline and learn to trust myself?
So it's interesting if we start to dissect this, because as you're talking, Dax, I can see a lot of the whole system in place as to why you're ending up failing again and again. I've heard this. I just heard you tell yourself that you're not good at self-discipline. So you believe that you're not good at self-discipline. That's a thing, an identity that you have. And so if that's what you believe about yourself, then what are you going to be?
I'm not going to be self-disciplined.
Right. And so if I said, okay, let me give you a list of things that you should do. So Dax, do these things and prove to yourself that you're good at self-discipline. You'd probably rah, 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 go do it for a little while and then fail and then fall back into that belief of, I'm not good at self-discipline. And look, I just compiled even more proof of that. See? Even more proof that I'm not good at self-discipline. I would actually guess that you're pretty good at self-discipline. Now you're looking at me like, what are you talking about, Brandon? If you don't mind me asking some questions, do you brush your teeth every day?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it take discipline to brush your teeth every day?
Yeah. Some days more than others. Feeling really tired, going to bed late. I force myself to brush my teeth anyways.
So why do you do it? How do you do that?
I don't know. I know it's good for me, and I don't have cavities next time I go to the dentist, and don't like having tooth pain. So make myself brush my teeth.
Okay. So you have certain reasons, you're avoiding certain consequences, right? But I think ultimately it comes down to you're probably in the habit. Mm-hmm. Naturally, you're in that habit. So every day, that's what you do. When you're in a state of shame, yet you're trying to work your recovery, what a lot of people do is they say, okay, I'm going to work harder and be more self-disciplined so that I get out of recovery. And it's this trap that so many people fall into, because what it does is it says, I've got control here. I'm going to prove myself. And once I prove myself, then I will have arrived. Ah, I made it. Yay. But it's a setup. You're describing this setup, Dax. Do you see it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a setup, because will you fail?
If I'm scared of failing, if I'm doing it through shame or anything like that, then yeah.
But hang on, will you just fail in general? Will there be moments of failure in your life?
Oh, absolutely. Always.
Okay. So listen to hear the contradiction there. You're saying, I don't want to be a failure. I'm scared of failure. Yet you just said, absolutely, always, I'll fail in my life. And so then what do? We just sit back and say, okay, the failure it is then. That's my whole life, right? No, we don't do that. But then there's the other side of the pendulum, which is, okay, I'm gonna work so hard. white knuckle and force myself to never fail, which sets up a binge later on. It sets up a, I can't handle life. So I'll go relapse and numb out and escape because I'm trying so hard to be perfect. Neither of those extremes is actual recovery. At the core of recovery, Dax, and I really want you to understand this. There's something at the core of recovery that is so, so important. And I hope you don't mind me getting a little preachy here. But it's self-acceptance and self-compassion and self-love. And when I say those things, it's like, yeah, I know. I should love myself. But no, it's loving you exactly as you are right now today. Even if you relapse this morning, it's applying grace to your life. And in my opinion, the atonement of Jesus Christ, where you're able to say, you know what? I'm not going to try to be perfect. I'm not going to try to prove myself because I don't need to prove myself. My sins are already forgiven. God already loves me. That love is unconditional. And when you rest into that, what you're not doing is pushing forward to prove yourself out of the shame. You're actually falling back into the reality that you're an imperfect human being, okay? So this sounds like what I'm saying, and this is all kind of, it's like a paradox, so it's hard to totally explain. It sounds like I'm kind of saying, well, throw your hands in the air and just be who you are, right? But that's not totally what I'm saying. What I am saying is when you do focus first and foremost on that self-forgiveness, self-compassion, and self-acceptance, then you resonate in a state of acceptance and you get out of a place of force and control, resonating in shame and fear, and you're actually up higher. You're resonating on a higher level now. And you're in a place of power. You're much more likely to be able to overcome triggers. You're much more likely to choose what consequences you want in your life and what consequences you don't when you're in that place of self-acceptance. And so we get it backwards. It's, I feel shame. I feel fear that I'm not good enough. So then I've got to take that shame and fear to motivate me to get better. And so I go spin my wheels and try to be better. And what do you know? It feeds my shame and my fear. Versus, I'm not going to take the shame and the fear to try to be better. I'm going to accept myself right where I'm at today. Love myself. Know that I'm loved and find that love somewhere. Whether it's a good friend, whether you pray, whether you take a moment in nature, whatever you do to just surrender for a moment and just feel acceptance. Okay. Now that I'm there, now I'm going to want to step into my recovery work from that intention. So am I making sense, Dax?
Yeah, absolutely. And acceptance is definitely something I've been putting a lot of work into over the last couple of weeks. I thought I was working on that for the last year, but I hadn't even really scratched the surface. I guess now it's my turn to get a little preachy. I think of, I'm LDS, so I think of, there's a talk from Elder Holland, and he talks about a 14-year-old boy who comes and says, I don't know if the gospel is true, but I think it is. And the gist of that whole talk is that Elder Holland says, like, bring what you can to the table, like bring forth every ounce of belief that you have. And when you can do that and surrender it to God, he'll help you make up the difference. So my mantra lately has been one, like the serenity prayer of, let's see, how does the serenity prayer go? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah, so that one,
I love it.
Yeah, that one's been really important for me lately. And then if I'm feeling a lot of self-doubt, I'll say aloud, God, I don't know if I can do this, but I really think I can, and I need you to help me make up the difference. And on days that I put focus into that, I definitely feel a shift. And it's really important to get to that place of self-love. And I'm kind of getting there, but it's hard for sure.
You know, so there's a process to it. You need to identify what your shame is, identify your monsters, so to speak, or your demons. Once you identify them, then you don't fight against them. You don't say, no, I'm going to act like I'm not a failure. You don't fight against them. You accept them, and you actually appreciate them. Thank you for protecting me from failing. I appreciate that, but no thank you, right? And then the third step is to actually act against the shame. So it's actually to experience something different than what the shame has told you. So, like, for example, you coming on this podcast and saying, hey, world, I'm Dax, is very much against that shame that says you're a failure, you should hide. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so,
it's part of the reason I did it, for sure.
I love it. And so it's little moments like that over and over again that are going to start to kill that narrative inside of you, Dax. They're going to start to say, like, no, I'm perfectly imperfect, and I'm okay as I am. You know, you were talking about you bring what you can to the table. I think sometimes when you're steeped in addiction and shame, sometimes you can't even see what you're bringing to the table. You know, you're just separated from Emily. You've had some off and on relapses, and there's this narrative that's pretty in the forefront that says, I fail. I let people down. I don't follow through. You know, I try to do my best, but eventually I'm going to fall. And so that becomes kind of identity. And the reality is, if we were to look at what you're bringing to the table today, what do you see?
Well, for the most part, some really solid effort. I don't know. I feel really committed. I feel really powerful in my recovery when I'm in the right headspace. But
I want you to go beyond. So it's interesting what you said, which is good stuff, but effort and commitment. So you're focusing on like the things that you're doing, what you can do, but go further for me. Like, who is Dax? What is Dax bringing to the table?
I think I have a lot of good that I can bring to the world. I think I have the potential to help some people in some powerful ways, which is another reason I wanted to come onto the podcast to kind of tap into that.
I'm going to be annoying, Dax. I realize I'm being annoying. Notice how you're saying it. I think I have a lot of potential. I think I can help people. So there's that shame inside of there saying, oh my gosh, like I don't want to fully own this, right? Like if I were to say to you, Dax, you're a warrior for recovery and a warrior for truth. You're an example to 20-year-olds, and you're really a courageous example who's stepping into your purpose. You're a son of God who's unconditionally loved, right? So I'm speaking truth right now, Dax. You see that? Mm-hmm. And do you hear what I'm saying versus I'm putting forth my best effort and I want to help people and I want to be good? Well, that's great, all that want and put. But the reality is you are bringing to the table today the things that I just said. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And for you to, you might not believe it fully, what I just said. It's like you might know it here in your head, but do you feel it really in your heart? right?
Yeah.
And the way you believe it is by what I was saying earlier. Step into acting as if that's what you are, and you'll realize that that truly is what you are. And when you step into that more and more, like step into that feeling of power and understanding who you truly are and loving yourself there, relapse starts to just go away. Sobriety starts to take care of itself. When you use sobriety to try to prove that you are good or to try to get some identity from that, then you're more likely to act out and relapse, right?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
How does it feel when I say that stuff about you?
It's like, I don't know. It's like it's like there's this gossip that's being confirmed to me. You know, those are definitely thoughts I've had, but you're right. My shame kind of beats it down. So it makes my heart beat a little. I'm like, oh, whoa, is that real?
There's a fog there, right? There's kind of I don't know if like I can fully sit in that.
Yeah, right? For sure. I think about another episode where I don't remember what episode it is or what you guys are talking about for most of it, but you and Tyler are talking about like the idea of like God is doing this to me. And then I can't remember if you or Tyler shares like three alternatives to that of God is doing this for me, God is doing this with me, and God is doing this through me. And I do firmly, like, I know those things. I know that God is doing this through me and for me for a reason. I know that there's something I have to offer. If I pull through this and I come out the other side strong, I know there's something I have to offer to other people in my situation.
Right.
And that's definitely something I'm trying to hang on to, because yeah, there's all this shame that wants me to think otherwise. But when I, on days that I'm able to hang on to those truths, that's like, those are the good days for sure.
Well, it's hard. You know, your girlfriend's hurting. You've been paying money for therapy, trying to get better, and so like the voices can hit buttons that are easy to push of like, see, like you're not going to get this. And even now you're saying, if I pull through this rather than when, or as I pull through this, it's this wavering of like, oh my gosh, is it really true that God's doing this through me? And by the way, that's one of my favorite things. I love it because it's about not being a victim to what's happening, but actually seeing the purpose in it and then turning it into purpose with God, right?
Yeah.
So I'm glad you remembered that. It's one of my favorite things. But it's noticing those thoughts, Dax. It's noticing the like I say, the demons inside of you. I've really been lately into like studying shadow work, and Carl Jung is really into it. And what he says is that it's really, really healthy for us to be able to get to know and understand our blemish, our dark side, and you think about that, we spend a lot of our life trying to fix it, trying to run from it, trying to pretend like it's not there. And we see that with addiction all the time is, I don't want that. I want to run from that. As opposed to taking a step back and saying, why do I have it? What is God doing with me? How is this blessing me to become a stronger man, a man with more purpose, a better partner to my girlfriend or my wife or whomever, right? And so, yes, I have this shadow and it is blessing my life. I don't want to hang out with it forever and every day or whatever, right? But yeah, it's God has given you these experiences, Dax, not as a curse. He's given you these experiences because he loves you. I know that feels backwards, right?
Yeah.
But I believe that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so... Yeah, the self-love, I think I can get there. Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
Yet?
Sure.
So you talk a lot about trust. I mean, went to your like webinar for Lyft on trust a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
Listened to some episodes about it like yesterday, and actually in group this morning we talked about trust. And you know, you have your little equation for integrity, honesty, empathy, and consistency over time. And integrity and vulnerability are the keys there to trust. So if I don't trust myself, how do I apply that concept of building trust to myself? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Kind of. So if you don't trust yourself, then how can you apply, like, explain more, like, why don't you trust yourself?
Well, okay, here's an example. I love music. I'm a pretty decent singer. Some good self-care for me is like jamming out in my car and singing my guts out. And lately, every time I hear a song with some beautiful guitar, I want to play guitar. Like, I want to learn how to play guitar because I think it would be so powerful for me to just be able to strum out a song and sing a song I love. So my parents got me a guitar for Christmas, and I picked it up and strummed it a couple times, but I did piano for 2 years from the time I was 10 to 12, and then okay. I bailed on it. I loved being able to play the piano, but for whatever reason, I quit. Same thing, I played saxophone for like 2 years from when I was 14 to 16, I think, and then I quit. So my parents got me this guitar, and I'm so excited and I want to learn it so bad, but I'm like, it's just going to be the same thing. Like, I'm just going to pick up the guitar, sort of haphazardly learn it, and then eventually I'm going to just fizzle out and never touch it again. And because I'm like scared of myself doing that, and because I don't trust myself to follow through and stay consistent, I like haven't picked up my guitar and learned it. Mm-hmm. So, and that's kind of how I am with recovery. I'm going to toot my own horn for a second. In most areas of recovery, I'm killing it. Like, I've been really consistent on my dailies lately. I listen to podcast episodes of this podcast or the Betray the Addicted Expert like every day. I'm getting really good at boundaries and honesty and all that stuff. But I like I said, I don't trust myself to follow through in a crucial moment and pull through a trigger or something. And because I don't have that trust, I don't.
Right.
So I mean, Holly and I have been talking about how like I need to do some little practices to prove I can trust myself. Is there more to it than that? Or is it really just like, I gotta, like, once I do this once I can pull through once, then I can start to build that trust.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think doing practices to realize, hey, I can have integrity with myself, will be helpful. But I think even before that, just to challenge your narrative a little bit. So you just gave me all of the proof as to why you're not trustworthy to yourself. And this is why I was talking to you about brushing your teeth earlier, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I'm not perfectly trustworthy, but I do believe that I am a person who's acting without integrity, who naturally does have integrity. Like, who I truly am is a man with integrity. Who I truly am is a man who can trust himself. And I know that's who I am. And because I know that's who I am, that's how I'm going to show up. Now, there's some kind of trauma or life experience that has kind of gotten into your head that has said to you, you're going to fail. You're not going to come through. And you've latched on to those experiences and focused on those things until you've turned it into an identity. And so to reprocess those experiences would be helpful, to be able to say, yeah, I failed there, but I can look at it differently. I don't need to look at it as if I'm untrustworthy forever. And I'm going to shift my thinking there. So the power of your thoughts is really important in order to start to change your behavior. And again, this is where that grace comes in a little bit, is to be able to stay in that middle ground where you have room to fail, so you're not condemned when you do fail, but you also have room to pursue growth and change at the same time. And that space is where real self-realization starts to happen, is I can fail and I can feel what failure feels like, but I can succeed at the same time. But you won't get in that space, Dax, even if you are kind of doing that, you won't feel it or you won't believe it if what you're, the lens that you're looking through is, I'm going to just notice how I always let myself down. It's really fascinating to me as we've been talking, you're like spouting off things that I've said years ago, and you got the trust equation memorized, and you got like you have, we did an intake over a year and a half ago. And a lot of people who I did intakes with a year and a half ago, I'll never see again. And they're not working their recovery, and they're not being consistent, and they're not changing, and they're not growing, and they're not, but here you are showing some consistency, showing some follow through, showing some integrity in your recovery. And I think you may be way too focused on sobriety, because you might just be looking at that and saying, okay, that's either failure or not failure. And the reality is you are much different than what you say you are to yourself. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. You're kind of blowing my mind a little. And I feel like I said earlier, I feel like these are things I knew subconsciously, but I just suppressed them. I don't know. Anyways.
I was teaching Lift One last night. And for those of you that don't know, Lift is our group program. And in the very first week of Lift One, we talk about an acorn and how does an acorn become an oak tree? And you think about it, it's like, well, how does an acorn become an oak tree? A little tiny thing becomes a massive thing. And it's interesting when I ask the group, because they give me really awesome answers. Here's some of the really cool ones. They say, well, an acorn has to crack open in order to start to become a tree. So it has to be busted open a little bit. An acorn also has to be under the soil, so it's in the dark a little bit. And it has to practice some kind of faith, knowing that there's some kind of light or sunshine above it. So there's some kind of just like, I don't know where I'm going or what I'm doing, but I'm just going to start growing. But here's the main one. An acorn already knows what it is. So it knows that it's an oak tree. So it becomes an oak tree. It grabs the nutrients it needs from the soil. It soaks in the sun that it needs. It soaks in the water that it needs to become an oak tree, because it already knows it's an oak tree. And I'm talking tonight to a guy who I was his therapist over a decade ago, and when I first started doing therapy, Dax. And when I started doing therapy with him, I sucked at doing therapy. I had no idea what I was doing. So he was one of my first clients ever. And I think back and I cringe at the things that I told him to do and some of the feedback, but I was learning, I was growing, right? And I'm talking to him tonight, he's just like, for 10 years, for a decade, has just been just amazing in his recovery as a father, as a husband, just like building trust with his spouse and people around him. And sobriety is not even a question. That just happens. And I think, okay, how did he get to where he is when I sucked so bad as a therapist? What do you think, Dax?
He already knew he could get there.
Yeah, he knew it. You know, I want you to change your language from if I, or what I'd like to do is be an advocate for people, or to more I am statements. I know that I am. This is who I am. And because you'll start acting as if, and you'll start being as if, and what you are doing is saying, I am a failure. I am a person who's not going to play the guitar and prove to myself again that I don't follow through, as opposed to I am a person that follows through. And I am a person who can learn and grow and develop and help people. That's who I am. So do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's time for you to take your next step in recovery, Dax. You're on level one where it's like fighting for sobriety, understanding your shame a little bit, getting a support system, being open to therapy. So you've been doing good stuff. Now it's time to take it a little bit deeper to really understand who you truly are. And man, the world needs, I'm going to call you a kid, but you're a man. The world needs kids or men like you, Dax, because you're young and you're going to do a lot of good. So any last question for me?
Well, I don't know. Kathy at your office did a Lyft webinar the other night, and she shared this story about this man who, and she shared this story with the phrase, whatever means necessary. It was about this man who, I guess his wife went out on a 4-day business trip, and he was really nervous. He'd been doing well in his recovery, but he was nervous about her trip. And he set up all these safety plans and things for while she was gone, and had some good self-care, and was accountable to his group and stuff. And he was doing those things really well. And for the first 3 days, it went really well. And then on the fourth day, he was getting hit with urges, and he followed through, did all his stuff, and the urges kept coming anyways. And so later that night, he was like, okay, I'm just going to go to bed. And he said, no, that's not safe. Like, if I go to bed, something's going to happen. I don't feel safe to go to bed right now. So he laid down on his kitchen floor, just on the tile. He said, I'm going to lay here until I feel safe to go to bed. And apparently he laid there till like 3 a.m. And then he finally knew, if I go to bed right now, I'm just going to fall asleep and I'm going to be okay. And that story has been bouncing around in my head since then, for the last 4 days. And it's this really powerful thing. And I keep telling myself, like, man, I want to get there. I want to get there. But I don't know. You're just opening my eyes that, like, it's not I want to get there or, like, I hope I get there. I just have to make it happen. And I think I've been in this headspace for a long time of, like, I'm missing something. Like, something's missing in my recovery. But I've got all the parts. Like, I've got all the knowledge. My head is, like, crammed with recovery knowledge. I've been living it for a while, and I think I'm just overthinking it. I think I'm making it more complicated than it needs to be. And I don't know. You're right. I just need to dig down and shift those beliefs about myself.
Yep. Step 3 is my favorite step, 12 steps. Turn your will and your life over to the care of God. So at this point, Dax, you have enough in that head of yours. I can't give you a magic answer to get better right now, but it's about letting go of the shame, letting go of the thoughts that beat you down, just letting go, and just knowing that you already have what it takes, that it's already there right in front of you, and really starting in on that self-acceptance. So this has been an awesome episode, Dax. I really appreciate you sharing your story and asking such good questions. And it's going to do a lot of good for a lot of people. And like I said, you're a freaking warrior. So way to step onto the battlefield today. I really do appreciate you. So
thank you, Brandon.
Yep. You guys, if you liked this episode, please share it. Also, please leave a review, and we would really appreciate feedback. And thanks again to Dax. Have a good day, you guys. We'll see you. Bye.
Thanks.
Do you feel like no matter how much therapy you do, things really aren't getting better? That you'd like to accelerate your feelings of peace and empowerment because it's just not happening? As a man, do you feel stuck? Do you lack purpose? Do you not know what real masculinity is? Are you unable to create safety and passion and intimacy in your relationships? Are you lacking connection to God? If you're relating to any of these things, then you need to come to our Rising Sun Conference. Tyler and I have developed a process and an experience for men to shift into their power, to know who they truly are, to experience their purpose, and learn how to connect to God. So go to risingsunconference.com. Now that's rising sun as in S-O-N, conference.com, and sign up there as soon as you can because space is limited. We'll see you there.